One Patriot survivor writes, "Awful indeed was the scene of the wounded, the dying, and the dead on the field after the carnage of that dreadful day. The attackers have no doctor. Two Loyalist surgeons were killed, leaving Dr. Uzzle Johnson to treat more than 100 wounded men. For example, Joseph Dobson was wounded by a ball passing through his right arm near the elbow joint and also by another which struck him on the left side and ranged round his back and lodged in his right shoulder and was cut out by a British doctor. William Moore's leg is so mauled it has to be removed. He is left at a nearby home. When his colleagues get back to southwestern Virginia, his wife is told. She mounts a horse and rides across North Carolina to nurse and retrieve him. A Tory has taken a bullet to the forehead and through the skull. Shockingly, he is alive and sitting upright, though unconscious. Brain matter oozes from each hole. When patriots lay him down, he dies instantly. Another wounded Loyalist has been keeping a diary. Dying, he writes a last entry. The 7th of October, the cursed rebels came upon us, killed and took us every soul, and so, my dear friends, I bid you farewell, for I am started to the warm country." Among the dead are all four Goforth brothers, at least one a Tory. Shelby may have been describing two of them when he relayed that two brothers, expert riflemen, were seen to aim at each other to fire and fall at the same instant. Betty Goforth hauled her dead husband home on a sled. One patriot nearly loses his mind upon realizing he has killed one brother and wounded another. Enoch Berry lost his father and brother, all Whigs. Darkness falls before the prisoners are tied up. Meanwhile, men plunder the British tents here. Captain Joseph McDowell takes 6 of Ferguson's plates and a cup and saucer. Everyone suffers through the terrible night. The victors have not eaten or slept in 40 hours, and there is little food on the ridge. "We had to encamp on the ground with the dead and wounded and pass the night amid groans and lamentation," one man writes. Another describes, "The scenes of the battleground the night after the contest is heart-rending in the extreme. The groans of the dying and constant cry of, 'Water! Water!'" Lieutenant Samuel Newell was wounded early in the battle. By evening, he has lost so much blood he needs help from 4 men to dismount. They put him by a fire. Campbell and Shelby come over, and Newell has the men put out saddles for them to sit on. Campbell says, "Now this is the first time I have seated myself since yesterday morning except on my horse's back." Micah Jafrost cares for a sergeant shot through the bowels and carried water to him in his shoe and attended to him until he died, which was just before day. The Whig suffering provides solace to one Tory. He later writes, "It is an agreeable satisfaction to think that although they got the better of us, damn 'em, we made them pay for it." The morning after the battle, the first sunny dawn in days, which was Sunday, the scene became really distressing. "The wives and children of the poor Tories came in great numbers," James Collins writes. "Their husbands, fathers, and brothers lay dead in heaps, while others lay wounded or dying, a melancholy sight indeed. Locals bring rumors of British cavalry on the way. The patriots hasten to leave. They and some of the prisoners quickly dig 2 shallow pits, locations unknown. Some of the Tory dead are wrapped in blankets and laid within, militia in one and provincials in the other. A few sources indicate another was dug for patriots. Collins says they are thrown into convenient piles and covered with old logs, the bark of old trees, and rocks. Rather than drag the Tory wagons with them, the soldiers pull them over campfires and watch them burn. The disabled are placed on litters, blankets stretched between 2 horses. At least 1,200 British weapons have been seized. The patriots remove the flints to disable the guns. Shelby writes, "When ready to start on the day's journey, the prisoners were marched in single file by the spot where the rifles and muskets were stacked, and each was directed to shoulder and carry the arms allotted to him." Shelby observes with his sword drawn. When an older man resists, Shelby says he should be able to carry one, given that he carried one here, and gives him a sharp slap across the shoulders with the flat side of his sword blade. The man takes a gun. Finally, they march out in the direction from which they came. The wounded Colonel Williams only makes it a few miles before he is taken to a home by the road and dies. The spy Carr said, "He knew he must die, and did so, cheerfully resigned to his fate." Please use the walking instructions under "Ferguson Stays Behind" and its audio clip.